I assume you know, but let me just say it again. Advent has started. Christmas is here again. And for the Christian church, really the Christian calendar begins with the first Sunday of Advent. So I know there are other calendars that sometimes we go with. We're going to celebrate the beginning of 2019 in a few weeks. But for the Christian church, our calendar begins today. It begins with the story of the birth of Jesus. And we're very eager to do all we can sort of to help us, help the congregation during this season. So in the weekly e-news, if you get that on Wednesdays or this morning's bulletin, there are various services and times and events that we want to tell you about. We want to let you know when they are and what's happening in them. So please be aware of those things for service times and events and happenings here at Nelson Avenue. And this year, we are focused on the theme, as Dale already said, from Bethlehem to the world. So I'm really thankful for the graphic that we have this year. It's, for me, an amazing graphic of that, what looks to me like that Christmas scene, Mary, Joseph, and the baby Jesus, and then behind it, this picture of the world, which is where we want to focus a lot of our attention. So even this morning, just before, or actually just during the greeting time, someone was wondering, well, is it Chinese Asian New Year? Is that why you're wearing this shirt this morning? And I said, well, no, it's not. This shirt is in my closet. You know, so it's one of the shirts, options for me to wear. And then I was reminded recently that, you know, I'm a person, I love blue. I wear a lot of blue. Maybe you didn't know that, but on Sunday morning, a lot of blue happening here, so a little green this morning for those of us who are, you know, kind of watching or aware of what I'm wearing from Sunday to Sunday, a little different color. It also, for me, every time I wear this particular shirt, I feel like I try and honor our family a little bit. But also, it is part of the theme, Bethlehem to the world. Bethlehem for the world. So we're going to be in Bethlehem. But we don't want to get stuck in Bethlehem. That would be really awful for us. If we thought, oh, Bethlehem, Bethlehem, and we never realized the implications of the Christmas story and the story of Jesus for the world. This year in particular, I want to invite you, as we sing all these Christmas songs again, I want you to be listening, if you can, for the name of Bethlehem. How many songs have Bethlehem in it? I've counted so far at least 10. I'm sure there are more. And then I also want to invite you, very genuinely, as best I can, to join the song this season. Right? Join the angel chorus. Sing the old songs. Sing the new songs, but I want to say for the sake of our souls, our hearts, our spirits, for the sake of others, sing in church, but also sing in your homes and sing in your vehicles, and maybe even if possible, although it's a little weird, sing or hum in the bus or the SkyTrain or as you're walking through your neighborhoods. Join the song as we think about the implications of the Christmas story for the world. I'm really thankful. For me, it feels like orchestrated by God, but Petra Wuerl is here this morning. So Petra is one of the missionaries we support. She works in North Africa. And so she's been there 2.5, almost 3 years. She's here with us for Advent Christmas. I see that as Bethlehem to the world. So for those of us who connect with her in different ways, we want to be listening. How has the Bethlehem story, the story of Jesus, connected with that part of the world? And as we saw on the video announcements 2 weeks from today, children's choir from Zambia is going to be here, and I've been asking, I would love to hear, is there a Zambian Christmas song? How has the story of Jesus impacted Zambia? And just, I know you've already heard this, but I do want to say, I think it's a great challenge from the Children's Church that you pick up your World Renew gift catalog, and for the sake of the kids, but really for the sake of the world, could our giving be also that this idea of for the world, giving for the sake of the world, to bless the world?
Micah chapter 5, marshal your troops now, city of troops, for a siege is laid against us. They will strike Israel's ruler on the cheek with a rod. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me, one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. Therefore, Israel will be abandoned until the time when she who was in labor bears a son. And the result, and the rest of the brothers returns to join the Israelites. He will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth. And he will be our peace when Assyrians invade our land and march through our fortresses. We will raise against them 7 shepherds, even 8 commanders, who will rule the land of Assyria with sword, the land of Nimrod with drawn sword. He will deliver us from Assyrians when they invade our land and march across our borders. The remnant of Jacob will be in midst of many people, live dew from the Lord, like showers on the grass, which do not wait for anyone or depend on man. The remnant of Jacob will be among the nations, and midst of many peoples, like a lion among the beasts of the forest, like a young lion among flocks of sheep, which mauls and mangles as it goes, and no one can rescue. Your hand will be lifted up in triumph over your enemies, and all your foes will be destroyed. In that day, declares the Lord, I'll destroy your horses from among you and demolish your chariots. I'll destroy the cities of your land and tear down all your strongholds. I'll destroy your witchcraft, and you will no longer cast spells. I'll destroy your idols and your sacred stone from among you. You will no longer bow down to the work of your hands. I'll uproot from among you your Asherah poles. When I demolish your cities, I'll take vengeance in anger and wrath on nations that have not obeyed me. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Well, I'm wondering this morning, as we begin Advent and Christmas, what you want for Christmas this year. Now, I know that typically kids are asked that, but I have a feeling that more of us are maybe sometimes wondering. I wish somebody would ask me what I want for Christmas. So I'm wondering if you're willing to, and you don't have to, but if you'd be willing to take out your phone or a piece of paper, or there should be a little, some room in the church bulletin this morning, or maybe your neighbor's hand or arm, and write what you want for Christmas this year. I can imagine some of us saying, well, I want Christmas this year to be just like last year, or just like when I was a kid, because that was so awesome. Others of us saying, I don't want Christmas to be like last year, because last year was awful or dreadful. Some of us say, I just want to go home for Christmas this year, or I want lots of Christmas music. Or others saying, I've already heard enough Christmas music. I want more malls and crowds and shopping. I want less malls and crowds and shopping. Some of us are just longing, as I was praying earlier in the service, for a job. Like, Lord, give me and our family a job. Provide for me and for us. Others are just, I just need my marriage helped or saved, or our family, or my relationship with someone. And the list can go on. But I do want to encourage you to write something down. Something on your phone, or something on a piece of paper, or something on your hand, or just to write even just one word. What do you want for Christmas this year? What I found myself wanting, and this is maybe an annual longing, as I think about our church community this year, we have 8 services during the month of December. And I guess I need to be at all of them. So, you know, it's part of my work and my job. I think about the concerts and the kids' events we're being invited to, and the Christmas cards I want to write, and then various visits and chocolates that some of them I will give away, and some of them I will be invited to eat, and shopping, and maybe some caroling, and the Schulbuck World Cup, and the list goes on. And I found myself writing, Jesus, keep me sane. I don't want Christmas to be just about busy, 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 busy. Let's see how much we can fill up in the month of December. Jesus, don't let my soul get lost this season. Now, this morning I'm asking what you want for Christmas, because I think it's a question we could have asked in a similar way 2,000 years ago. People who were living around the first century, around the time of Jesus, especially Jewish people, what they were waiting for or longing for or expecting. And for many of them, it was one word, Messiah. We want Messiah. Because we've been told Messiah is coming. And of course, they weren't saying Messiah. Most of them were saying Mashiach. That's where we get Messiah from. We're just going to try that for a moment together. Mashiach. Mashiach. Which means the same thing as Christ. It means anointed one. Right, so the kings were typically the Mashiachs, because they were anointed often with olive oil. And they were longing, most of them, you know, it's one word, but really they're longing for a conquering Messiah or a conquering king. Right? They want a king who will come from the line of David, as God promised David in 2 Samuel chapter 7. But they want a conquering Messiah, or a conquering king, or a strong king, a warrior king, because that was King David, right? He was the best. Well, he wasn't perfect by any means, but he's the best king we ever had, and he was like a conquering king, right? Goliath and the Philistines, and that's what we're waiting for. And I acknowledge that if you read the Old Testament prophets, the Hebrew prophets, people like Isaiah, this is supposed to be Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel, and even this morning Micah, if you read them in a certain way, you hear what these people were longing for, a conquering king, a conquering Messiah. And I acknowledge, and I don't know if you had this experience this morning, but I acknowledge that Hebrew prophets are not the easiest to read or to hear. They are, for me, the most difficult part of the Bible to understand. And that's because the prophets are complex, right? They have these rich prophecies that have layers of meaning and all kinds of images. And they're always pulling something from the history of Israel into their prophecies as they're speaking both into the present and in the future. And as you listen to them, you realize, oh, they're talking about the people of Israel, but also the peoples. They're talking about the nation of Israel, but also the nations around Israel. And sometimes when you hear or read the prophets, it feels like they're talking to the whole creation. The valleys and the hills and the trees and the animals, their vision is so big and so complex and so multifaceted. It's like, what are they saying? And I don't know if some of you had the experience this morning, like, what is Micah chapter 5 all about? One of the things that I think the prophets do, and I think Micah is doing, at least that's my reading of it, because it took me a lot of readings of Micah 5, to what's going on here. I think one of the things the prophets do and Micah does is they so often turn the tables on us. They sort of turn our expectations upside down. So if you read through the prophets, if you're someone who feels comfortable in life, the prophet will say, watch out. If you're someone who's in distress, the prophet will say, comfort to you. God's on the move. They talk about deserts becoming like gardens. They talk about cities becoming like haunts. No one there anymore. They talk about a virgin that's going to have a child. And the child is going to lead the nation. And on and on and on it goes, turning the tables, turning expectations, almost like an upside-down message. And that's what I think is happening, at least partly, in Micah chapter 5. So I want to just point out very quickly five things or five ways that I think Micah is turning the expectations upside down. So Micah, along with a lot of other prophets, is stoking the fires of expectation for the people of Israel. So a ruler is coming. That's Micah 5 verse 2. A king is coming. But this king is going to be a king or a ruler, but he's also going to be a shepherd. Because in verse 4, we read, he will stand and shepherd his sheep. So, he's not the conquering king you're all hoping for. He's a king, but he's a shepherd at the same time. We might say he's a king or a leader, and he's also a great counselor. He's probably going to be able to talk well, but also listen really well. He's going to have both power and lots of grace. He's going to be, picking up an image from the end of the Bible, he's going to be both a lion and a lamb. And if you can put those two things together, that's going to be the coming Messiah. Another way that Micah does this, turning the tables upside down, is that he talks about struggle. It sounds like there's going to be some kind of battle or war. People are going to be dealt with. But he also talks about the ruler will come and he will, in verse 5, he will secure our peace. So you have to have a vision in the future of a ruler who's coming. There's going to be some conflicts, but he's going to put that together with a longing for peace. A third way Micah does this is, especially from verse 2, there's going to be a ruler coming. He's going to come from the line of David, picking up this idea. He's going to come from Bethlehem. He's going to be a human ruler in the line of David, but we're also told in verse 2, his origins are from of old, from ancient times. So you got to somehow put this together. He's going to appear on the scene. He's going to be part of the family of David, but he's also, we're also told, he's ancient. You have to somehow hold this together. Another way that Micah does this, and this is something I'm hoping we ask over and over again during this particular Christmas season, why Bethlehem? Now, I'm going to try, I'll probably say again in coming weeks, for us who know the Christmas story, we just think, oh, Bethlehem, of course, Bethlehem. It had to be in Bethlehem. Jesus had to be born in Bethlehem. We love Bethlehem. Bethlehem's great. But as Micah announces Bethlehem in verse 2 of this chapter, we should be wondering, why not Jerusalem? I know it sounds weird for me to say this because our Christmas cards all have these nice scenes about Bethlehem. But for people in that day, Bethlehem was small, puny, insignificant, unimportant. David was born there, but Jerusalem, that's the place. That's the place of power, prestige, privilege. That's where all the prophecies are going to happen. So what's this about Bethlehem? And then fifthly and finally, I think the way that Micah, and this is what the prophets do over and over again, they always turn the tables on us, right? So I think if I had been a Jewish person living 2,000 years ago or longer or whenever, I'm reading the Hebrew prophets, I'm always thinking, yeah, God's going to get them. We're okay, because we're God's special people. God told us we're His special people. So we're okay. But one day God's going to get them. Right? There's us, we're okay. But those people, they're not okay. And God's going to get them one day. And what Micah does is he flips this right on its head. And at the end of the chapter, he says, well, Jesus is coming, the ruler's coming, Messiah's coming, but he's also coming for you, right? Because you're not okay. At the end of the chapter, we hear about the Messiah who's going to destroy your horses and chariots. Any trust you have in warfare or destroying other people, the Messiah is going to destroy your chariots and horses. The Messiah is going to destroy your witchcraft. Witchcraft among God's people? Well, wherever it is, the ruler is going to come and destroy it. He's going to destroy your idols. So something happens in Micah and in other prophets. It's like you think Messiah is going to just take care of the nations. He's also coming to deal with God's people. So it's not like they're okay. I mean, they're not okay and I'm okay. It's like there's problems among the nations and also among God's people. And this is what Jesus, I think, also does. You know, when he says something like this, when Jesus says, the meek will inherit the earth, that should be like, what? I thought it was the strong and the powerful and the crafty who inherit the earth. Or when Jesus says, I've come to call the sick, not the healthy. And if you think you're healthy, you're part of the sick, because I've come to call all of you. All of you need a doctor. And I've not just come to call the unreligious and irreligious. I've come to call the religious, maybe especially the religious, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the people who think they have it all together. I've come to bring woe upon you. I've come for the good people. And the people who the good people think are the bad people. I've come for the insiders and the outsiders, the winners and the losers. Jesus keeps turning the tables. I think that's why it was so difficult for some people to understand his ministry, because you're not supposed to be doing this, right? And this morning I sense that maybe Jesus wants to turn the tables on us during this season as well. That maybe Jesus wants to come into our lives and we have our longings and our hopes, and I trust that, I'm just trusting this morning, all the hopes, all the longings you have, anything you've written down, I'm going to trust it's a good longing. It's a good desire. It's a good expectation. But it's possible that Jesus also, along with hearing that longing, that expectation, also wants to maybe turn the tables on us a little bit this Christmas season. That's possible that some of us think, well, Christmas is going to be great this year as long as she's going to be okay, as long as she kind of behaves herself, as long as he, you know, doesn't say anything inappropriate, anything wrong. But maybe Jesus is saying, well, I'll deal with them, but maybe I'm asking you to change or to have a different kind of attitude or spirits as you move into the season. I love the prayer of St. Francis, especially that one line that says, you know, it's not so much the longing to be understood, but that I would long to understand. So maybe that's going to be a turning of the tables for some of us. You know, I want this person, my family, my friend during the season to understand me, but maybe the calling is for me to understand them. I want them to reach out to me, but maybe the calling is for me to reach out to them. In a few moments, we're going to sing a song. It's called This Is Our God. And I've asked the worship team to lead us in the song because I think it's an Advent song. I don't think it was written to be an Advent song. But some of the lyrics from the song say this. And it for me, it just helps me kind of reorient myself. Who is this God we're waiting for? So often in my mind, he's the powerful God, the strong God. He's going to just come and bulldoze. But when I read the scriptures and I hear a song like this, I think this is the God that Jesus Christ shows us, a refuge for the poor, a shelter from the storm. Someone who will wipe away the tears, return our wasted years, a healer to the broken, bringing peace to our madness, comfort in our sadness, a fountain for the thirsty. And I love this line because I've been reading articles and I've been hearing people talk about loneliness. And this line caught my attention, a lover for the lonely. A lover for the lonely. Jesus Christ presents himself to anyone this morning who's lonely as a lover for you. This is our God. This is the one we have waited for, we were longing for, we were desiring. This is the one, you are the one we are waiting for, Jesus, Lord and Savior. And he's called also in the Hebrew prophets the desire of the nations. And when I hear this song, we're singing in a few moments, I think, yes, he is the desire of the nations, the desire of our hearts. Now this morning, what I'd like to ask us to do, and again, this is invitation, so please don't feel obligation, but I was really serious about asking us to write something down, if you would, invitation that is. So what I want to do this morning is I want to do the following. I've written down my expectation on my phone, and so I want to hold my phone in one hand, like this is what I want. I just need you to help me be sane this Christmas season. And then I want to open up my other hand, and I want to say, but Lord, whatever you want to do, I want this, and I want to pray you give me this. But I also want to be open to what you might turn the tables in my life this season. I don't know. I want what I want, but Lord, I also maybe sense you want to maybe do something different this season that I wasn't really thinking about, but you might want to turn the tables of my expectations. So what I want to do this morning is I want to hold up my expectation and then open my hand to the expectation or what Jesus might do in my life this season. For me, every year again, it is an unbelievable season on Nelson Avenue. Like, Jesus does things among us he doesn't do the rest of the year. So I want to be open. I want to ask us to be open. So I'm going to invite the worship team up. We're going to sing this song, This Is Our God. And I'm going to invite you. We're going to pray in a few moments. I'm going to invite you during the prayer. If you have a phone with your expectation on it, or you have your neighbor's hand you wrote it on, I'm going to invite you to hold up that phone or hold up that piece of paper, hold up that hand, but also open up your hand. Jesus, whatever you want. Here's what I want. But maybe there's some turning of the tables you want to do in my life.